Hello and a warm welcome to another edition of The Debate coming your way from Press TV headquarters in Tehran. I'm your host, Behruz Najafi. Welcome to the program. The United States has deployed further firepower to the sensitive Persian Gulf region to counter what it calls threats from Iran or forces backing it against American soldiers in the region. Tehran has strongly rejected the claim, calling it propaganda warfare. Iran's leader says, and I'm quoting him, "We are not seeking a war. It's not for the benefit of the U.S. to wage a war either. We never start a war. We have never done so." Now, this is a confrontation of willpowers. Now, meantime, the Iranian defense minister has announced the country is fully prepared to counter any possible aggression. Now, what situation is awaiting the Persian Gulf region, given the circumstances? To start, let's watch a report.
Over the past weeks, there has been a spike in tensions between Iran and the United States, following Washington's heightened rhetoric and military movements in the region. The U.S. deployment of an aircraft carrier strike group and nuclear-capable bombers to the Persian Gulf prompted the speculation about an inescapable military confrontation between the two countries. But on Tuesday, the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution stressed that there will be no war between Iran and the U.S.
"No war is expected to take place, and none will, indeed. We never seek war in the first place, and they also know that a war will not be in their interest."
He described the current confrontation between the two countries as a war of wills, stressing that Iran's will is stronger.
"The definite choice of the Iranian nation is to resist the United States, and in this face-off, the U.S. will be forced to retreat."
Ayatollah Khamenei also dismissed the idea of negotiation with U.S. President Donald Trump's administration, saying they do not stand by anything.
"Negotiation with the U.S. is a poison, and a negotiation with that country's current administration is even more poisonous. The true meaning of negotiation is exchange, to give and take, and in this exchange, they are after Iran's points of strength. They say, 'Let's negotiate about missiles.' By this, they actually mean that you should decrease the range and precision of your missiles so that if one day we attack you, you won't be able to respond. It is obvious that no one in Iran will accept this."
The United States has been exerting pressure on the Islamic Republic over the past 4 decades, hoping for a regime change in Iran. The pressure has taken different forms, ranging from sanctions to military threats and supporting anti-Iran terrorist groups. But these attempts have proven futile, and as Iranian officials say, have made the Iranian nation more resolute to stand up to their enemies.
Now let's get going. Joining me in this debate will be Frederick Peterson, senior U.S. Congressional Defense Advisor from Washington, D.C. Michael Springman, American author and former diplomat also from Washington, D.C. Good to have you both, gentlemen. Let's begin with Frederick. As you heard in the introduction, Iran's leader announced the country is not for war. Actually, it's never been. And you also have the American officials on the other side, like Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, saying that we don't want a war with Iran. So what's all this fuss about?
I found that latest exchange between Mike Pompeo and between Iran to be encouraging, because both sides seem to be stepping back from what appeared to be an edging toward a brink, a very risky brink. I found that actually quite encouraging, and I think that if we can build upon that reluctance to engage in a competition of arms or a competition of will backed by arms in that region is going to serve the interests of both Iran and the United States and the region and the people who would suffer by a terrible exchange that could only, I should say not only, but would hold a very high probability of escalating out of control and with consequences that would be appalling to both sides. I think both sides woke up took a look at where this appeared to be heading and are backing off. Now it's time for both sides to engage together in a constructive dialogue in the public, probably best not in the public, but with serious negotiations among the serious players to actually revise and seize an opportunity that is there to entirely revise the relationship between Iran, the United States, and the power politics that are playing within the region. This, very surprisingly, high-risk game has led to a pausing moment where both sides have this opportunity. And I pray, I'm sure for all of us do, of goodwill, that both sides seize upon this moment to restructure a relationship fundamentally and really serve the interests of both sides and peace and prosperity in the region. It can be done. Do we have the will to do it? That's the question.
Mm-hmm. Now, Frederick, I got another question for you. Trump has dismissed New York Times report of Washington planning to send 120,000 troops to the region as fake news. Of course, this would be on top of the aircraft carrier strike group and four B-52 bombers already deployed to this region. But he said, if necessary, we'll send a hell lot more troops there, more than 120,000. Now, Trump was criticizing heavy U.S. deployment across the world during his campaign, where he promised to cut down on U.S. military presence abroad. So what has caused this change of heart?
Well, he did not threaten to send. He said that we could. And given a deterioration of this opportunity and a failure of both sides to collaborate on this opportunity, certainly Iran also has possibilities that they could take to extend and aggravate the crisis on their side. Trump did not, as the New York Times seemed to suggest, threaten to do this. This was an option that was on the table and proposed. It was not something that is being written or even contemplating as a specific objective to be implemented into policy. And in fact, if there was an engagement in that in the Gulf, it would take far more resources than what had been discussed in the pages of the New York Times in order to succeed. But with Donald Trump, there is an opportunity to negotiate this. It's not a big surprise that there are potential strengths on both sides. The art of diplomacy comes in avoiding a collision of those strengths and working in good faith toward a real solution. This step back by both sides, Iran and the United States, from the threatening language that seemed to be leading up almost inevitably here, provides this opportunity. And I certainly hope that both sides will take it. They would find in this administration specifically, and in Donald Trump, a partner that would vastly exceed the expectations of so many in the traditional diplomatic service to the interests of all within the region. Question is, the large question in boldface and italic is, will we accept this opportunity for peace and growth together? The next few days, actually, is going to have some answers to this and indications of which way we tend to be going. Mm-hmm. The pause is a good thing. Let's see how long it lasts and where it leads.
Uh-huh. Okay, we're trying to bring in Michael Springman from Washington, but we are facing some technical problems which we're working on to try to fix. Frederick, you didn't answer that part of my question, that something that Trump has always criticized, and he criticized it so vehemently during his campaign, that we don't need so many American boots on the ground, and he believed that it was a squandering of American money. He said the troops should go back home, but now he's sending more and more troops outside.
Well, the United States certainly has a very formidable military force, not just troops on the ground, but ships on the sea and aircraft in the air, and in space as well. The question is, how much is needed? And that depends upon where the policy is headed. A policy that is headed toward a peaceful emphasis on growth, prosperity, accommodation of all sides to reach a deal requires less of a military. Objectively, a military can be a huge waste of money and a threatening of the peace ab initio, by itself and from the very beginning. However, a strong military is necessary in order to enforce a right policy and in order to correct aggression and defend against aggression and protect the weak against the strong or incursions upon the peace. The United States has a very large military. It has large interests to be maintained and protected, and many countries around the world in alliance with the United States and in dependence upon the United States, pardon me, look to the American military to be there as a bulwark for, not for expansion or aggression, but for protection and peace.
Okay.
I think that Donald Trump's assertions during the campaign were quite correct. We don't need a vast growing military. If we can focus our resources on a vast growing economic sector and partnerships that are reaching for peace, the question is, do we have those partnerships? Are we willing to reach for peace and growth and prosperity together?
All right. Now, we have Michael Springman now with us from Washington, D.C. He's an American author and former diplomat. Good to see you, Michael. On Capitol Hill, Virginia Democratic Senator Tim Kaine says that it would be the height of idiocy and unconstitutional for this president to get the U.S. into a war with Iran. Do you agree with him?
Oh, yes, indeed. I think what they're trying to do is back their way into a war with Iran based on this authorization to use military force dating from September of 2001, where the Congress empowered the executive branch to engage in warfare against terrorists and al-Qaeda. And the American government under Donald Trump and his Zionist masters have worked very hard to try and tie Iran to al-Qaeda and to terrorism. Designating the Iranian Revolutionary Guards Corps as a foreign terrorist organization. So I think that it is the height of idiocy to do this, but it is also what Trump and Bolton and the rest of the B's are trying to do to involve the United States in war with Iran and to engage in essentially what will be a war by mistake, if not by miscalculation.
Mm-hmm. Now, Fred, if you allow me, I will ask Michael one more question. I asked you a couple of questions before. So, Michael.
Could I comment on that?
Sure. Okay. Is the United States really ready to start a new war, given the domestic problems that it is facing now? We all just had the Federal Reserve report that the economy, there was this downturn in the economy, and also less production in the vehicle sector. So what would be the consequence of a likely war between the U.S. and Iran in the Middle East, and what would the ramifications for the whole world?
Well, what it would mean for the United States would be to deflect attention from Donald Trump and his troubles with Congress and the American media, and to deflect from the problems with the American economy, and to hide the Mueller report and push that to one side. It would give Trump the appearance of being a leader in a war and being a great war captain. And, of course, this is an absolute disaster. It will harm the American economy no end. It will destroy the American economy once 30% of oil that flows through the Straits of Hormuz doesn't. The Americans, of course, will lose tens of thousands of soldiers, sailors, and airmen because the bases around ringing Iran will be held hostage and will be targets, as well as Israel, if Iran is attacked by this overwhelming force the Americans have sent to the region. This carrier strike group with a guided missile cruiser, 60 to 70 airplanes, and four Arleigh Burke-class destroyers, which are as large as World War II-era cruisers, displacing 9,000 tons and firing missiles, and having an Aegis radar system that will target 100 targets at once, in addition to the 12 heavy bombers that can carry 35,000 kilos of payload, from atomic bombs to 12 to 20 air-launched cruise missiles. So I think that, plus the bases at Al Udeid and in Bahrain with the Fifth Fleet, I think are an overwhelming use of force, and it is not needed, and it is far too easy to make a war by mistake or by miscalculation, as I've noted earlier.
Mm-hmm. Now, Frederick, some hawkish officials in the Trump administration, like Bolton and Pompeo, are adamant to go ahead with their so-called maximum pressure campaign on Tehran. What's the purpose of this? I mean, to force Tehran to a negotiating table or what?
Well, I would not identify them, either of those that you mentioned, Pompeo or
Bolton,
the secretary, as being hawkish. I would call them, Secretary Bolton, I would call them as aggressive, aggressive in reaching for superiority, military superiority. The question is, are they doing it for the right reasons or the wrong reasons? I almost had a chuckle here in the description of Donald Trump as being, by your other guest, by an agent of the hated Israeli state somehow, when he is also criticized by the very same people as being anti-Semitic. As long as the suit fits, if the suit doesn't fit, they'll trim it to make it fit. And holding up the Revolutionary Guard as basically a humanitarian organization, along probably with the Houthis that deliver coloring books to orphan children or something. No, what we're dealing with is a region that is racked by war and the threats of war, and racked by terrorism. Look at what has happened in the chaos, the utter chaos in Syria, because outside powers have become involved there.
All right, Frederick, sorry, I have to jump in.
Requiring outside powers, ironically, in order to protect the peace
Frederick,
of the region.
Sorry, Frederick, got to jump in.
Yes,
we're
sir.
Running out of time. I'm sorry. Let's have also Michael's final comments. 1 minute only, Michael.
Right.
Well, my comments inside of 1 minute are simply that there is no need to send overwhelming force to the region. The United States, Israel, and Saudi Arabia are the problems in the area. They are the ones who are disrupting the peace and internal security of the Middle East. They are the ones who want war and with Iran, if not the overthrow of its government and the destruction of its economy. And they are the ones that will ultimately pay the price if war does start, either by miscalculation, by deliberate attack, or by a false flag operation.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and that we come to the end of this debate. Let me thank our guests. We had Frederick Peterson, Senior U.S. Congressional Defense Advisor from Washington, D.C., and also Michael Springman, American author and former diplomat, who also joined us from Washington, D.C. And thank you, viewers, for watching this debate. We'll see you soon.